In any case, the private sector, the internet, seems to be stepping up. In this story, we're talking about Yelp deciding to publish health code violations on the site when profiling restaurants and searches. Will this change the way you use your restaurant? Will you pick a restaurant and make sure you look at the health code violations? Or is it overkill and bad for business because ultimately we don't understand how the industry works? These could be, everybody might have health code violations. I don't know how it works. One guy who does know how it works, Steve Dolinsky, the Hungry Hound, ABC 7. He's been a food reporter and I would say personality for years in Chicago. Award winning. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. By the way, I'm not a health inspector.
Yet. That's your next award-winning health inspector.
Yeah. I've never done that. But yeah, I've seen plenty of guys. I've actually been on shoots for ABC and for other people during a health inspection, which is kind of crazy. You can imagine like the chef saying, hey, Steve, hang on 1 second.
1 second.
We're having an inspection right now in the back.
That's not good PR.
Well, it's not their fault. I mean, they're random inspections. They never tell the restaurants when they're going to show up. They just show up. By the way, if you don't have a perfect 100 or a 95, doesn't mean it's a bad restaurant. You know, sometimes you get a violation for, there's too much freezer ice in the freezer, or you didn't have everything labeled properly in the date of the cheese, or, you know, little kind of minor infractions, and those get cleared up pretty quickly. It's when you have, like, you know, there's a leak and we saw rodents.
Right.
Or, you know, you got to clean up the garbage is everywhere. That's a problem. And so, to your question, originally part of the segment was, I think this is a great idea.
You think it's great?
Because I'm not a Yelp fan at all. I think, you know, the restaurant reviews are bogus.
They're almost always bogus, right? They're like, they pay a cousin to say this is the greatest restaurant of all time.
Yeah, there's like super Yelpers and advanced Yelpers and elite Yelpers. And I have no idea what that means. But right, there's no credibility. However, they are getting this from a third party, I believe, that has access to public data. And it's showing you the last several inspections, which I think is great. It shows you what I looked up one place there that I really like. Like at Noble Square, or maybe Westtown, called Nini's Deli, which is fantastic. And they had like a 90, I think, or an 88 or something. I'm like, you know, like two minor infractions a couple months ago. The place is great, though. I mean, I'd eat there every day if I could. So, you know, it's when they have like a 10 or a 15 or a 20 score, then it's like, well, you know what? Maybe I'm going to go somewhere else tonight for dinner. I think it's a good service to have. It's service journalism.
Will it change the way that people choose restaurants? I mean, will you go to Yelp now and say, what kind of food do I want? Where do I want it? And let me look at the health code violation.
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I'm only thinking if I go to some really random place in a strip mall in Stone Park that I've never heard of, you know, I might be curious. But most of the places I'm going to, I mean, I don't know. I guess if I looked at the place and I walk up to the front door and it looks a little sketchy, I might look on Yelp. Sure.
The door open and then look at your Yelp on your phone while you're in there.
I've never even thought about looking up a health rating before. The nice thing in California is they put the grade on the front window, which is great.
And they do that a little bit in New York, too. That's the A and the B's and stuff. We don't have that here.
We don't. I mean, that might be some lobbying situation. I don't know why they don't do that. If I saw a C out on the front window, I'm probably not going to go in there. I mean, that's a red flag.
That was the Yelp of the time, and it seemed to be somewhat effective in New York. As you said, if you see a C on the window, and more importantly, I think the restaurant's going to work a lot harder to make sure there's not a C on that window.
Absolutely. They know that any inspection could be any time of the day, and if that inspection does not go well, they're burned, and they're going to lose a lot of business because they're going to have like a C or a subpar rating. So I think, they're always on their toes. In Chicago, there are people with less experience. Like, they don't realize, they need to have, you know, three sinks for washing and cleaning the dishes. Oh, we got to get that fixed. But generally speaking, I think that they're on their toes. I mean, very rarely have I been to a place that is like, yeesh, why did I come here? You know, I don't know.
Well, that's what 773 says. They have the post letter grades in Europe as well. It's all over all the cities in Europe. So it seems like Chicago's just behind the times, or like you said, a lobbying situation.
Yeah, we're behind the times on a couple things, you know, not just that.
Well, there has been a lot. Yelp is an interesting and maybe a jump off into restaurants and the digital age, because comments and Yelp, a lot of restaurants don't like it. They don't like that, Yelpers are able to say what they want to say about the restaurant without them, you know, having any input or say. And you see this with the big chefs. They hate that.
Yeah.
So are they going? They seem to be pushing back. They don't want this stuff online.
They don't. Well, I mean, I think they're all for quality sort of service journalism and, you know, people who are reputable. That's the problem you get into. You don't really know who's reputable and who's not necessarily. And unfortunately, a lot of the criticism now is going toward Instagram and Twitter. And so it's there's a great piece in the Charlotte, North Carolina magazine. One of the writers is talking about how it's really driven by influencers now, people taking pictures and not really asking any questions. And so restaurants will have a media preview dinner. They'll invite a bunch of people online, and then all they do is take pictures, no questions asked. Right. They make it look pretty, and there is no sort of critical eye looking in the restaurants. And so I think your restaurants, you know, they want to have market. They have no money to spend on marketing, first of all. I mean, mm-hmm. unless you're a Let Us Entertain You or a big company with lots of marketing dollars, you don't have any money to promote your restaurant. So yeah, you're looking for any way you can. And so it's nice to have the influencers and Instagrammers come in and take some pictures. But yeah, they don't want random, you know, Jimmy from Berwyn who came in and said something bad about my pizza. Who's Jimmy?
Right,
and
who's what? Jimmy, right.
And by the way, did Jimmy's girlfriend used to work at that pizza place, and she's pissed that she got fired, and now Jimmy's going to like settle the score?
Right.
I mean, that's what a lot of Yelp
right.
is, I think.
Yeah.
And so you don't really know what the source is. But you know, like if Steve Dolinsky, you know, this guy you've been following for X amount of years, you know, says something about this place, you know, it's going to be pretty good.
I think about that with Instagram a lot, because I'll find myself, my wife does this too, where that will be more deciding factor of looking for the hashtag or possibly to the website or seeing who's tagged it to look at the dishes on whether we're going to that restaurant.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? The critical doesn't mean anything anymore, because you're at this level where there's so many restaurants that are already at 3 or 4 stars, and now you're just looking at she's able to look at the restaurant menu and be able to tag match those up and see the dish in its picture, and also at the same time see the menu.
Well, I got to say, I cop to the fact that I went to a place in Los Angeles a few weeks ago. We were on vacation, and there was a place I'd read about in Echo Park, and I'd seen the pictures on Instagram. And that was one of the reasons it had gotten so popular, because these Japanese sandwiches that they slice in half, and they show you the egg in the middle, and it's the whole thing, this production, and it's delicious, but, you know, it was definitely visual.
Right.
And a lot of chefs are moving toward that. In fact, I've talked to people who are like, yeah, we have to create a dish, you know, that people will request because of what it looks like, or how it looks, or how it's described, as opposed to a restaurant critic saying that it was delicious.
So that's a great question. Are you foregoing the restaurant critic these days? Are you going straight to social media, to either the site of the restaurant or to the tagged pictures that people have been there? 312-981-7200. Steve Dolinsky is here. He is the Hungry Hound on ABC7. You can check him out Friday nights. When's your schedule?
I'm glad you asked. It's Fridays at noon.
Okay.
I'm on live.
That's a good time,
lunchtime. And then Saturday at 10 o'clock.
There you go. 10 p.m. Saturday, 10 o'clock news.
That's tough during the college football season, because we're on after football, and so right. I'm on really late. But 10 o'clock on Saturday, Friday at noon.
There you go. Steve Dolinsky is here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Stay with us. We are on the air, 312-981-7200 here on 720 WGN, talking about the restaurant industry, and we're going to talk a little about Restaurant Week and some of the new restaurants that are out now. But before we move on, we're talking about social media and its impact on restaurants, and we're kind of talking about Yelp and moving on past that to Instagram and influencers, all that. You, early adopter of social media and food. You're not a reviewer. You're not a critic, but you've been a food writer and broadcaster for a long time. So you have adopted Twitter. And how has social media changed restaurant going or the restaurant business?
Well, you're able to get a much quicker read on restaurants, more than you ever did. In the old days, restaurant critics would wait a couple of weeks. They'd visit at least 2 times. And then they would sort of write a review about this place after it'd been open for a month. Now, I mean, a friend of mine who writes about food in Chicago went to a place that opened last week on day 2. Mm-hmm. And had pictures already on Instagram. And so, and I'm guilty of that too. I do the same thing. I go out early and, you know, I want to get a kind of early read on it. I don't think, it's not fair to say I'm reviewing this restaurant now, because I don't do reviews, but I do say, hey, you know what? These are some interesting things that I had. I really like this dish. If you go to the place, get this. I'm not going to give you a full breakdown of the whole menu, but in terms of what's happening with social media now, you're able to see really quickly What's going on in the city or anywhere in the suburbs, and you know who's out there, and what do they have on their menu, and what do I want to check out when I go?
Is that ultimately good or bad for restaurants? Because if you're going on day two and it's not good, they used to give you a little bit of time to get it right, but that's you just don't have that time anymore.
But I think, but these are people who are not restaurant critics. Like again, the guy that I'm talking about is a food writer. He covers stuff in the city. It's an early read. It's and I think people take that with a grain of salt. You know, they know that okay, it's day two. You know, I'm saying that up front, but these are the things I like. These are the things that maybe need work. I think it's good for a restaurant to hear that right off the bat. What's going on? You know, you're not going to stop them during service and say, hey, excuse me, these are the two things I like. These are the two things you got to work on. But, you know, you post a couple things maybe, and they get an idea of what the semi-pros or the pros are liking. And so maybe you're making some adjustments. But nobody expects to have a full-born review week one. I think it's just not fair. Yeah,
I don't think it's fair either. I just wonder how it's changed because with the influencers coming in and the ability to get all the glossy coverage that they need up top, do they even need restaurant reviews anymore? Well, do restaurants even need critics to come in and say if the food's good or bad?
Well, I think it helps. And I think a lot of places that you know, the respected places will not have influencers come in and they will not pay them and they will not give them free meals in exchange for coverage because that's just they don't need to do that and they have the self-respect and they have the confidence in their restaurants. But I think what's happening is that you know I think people when you're looking at, and this is for your listeners when they're looking at things online they should take with a grain of salt if someone's saying great things about this is there a hashtag sponsor or hashtag ad or hashtag you know they've got to disclose if they're being paid or getting freebies.
Do they have to do that?
You're supposed to. Now a lot of people don't or they bury it. Also look at look at that person's feed. Like do they only say great things about chain restaurants or do they mix it up? Do they go to small independent places in strip malls in Niles or do they only do River North, you know, big splashy restaurants? I mean that kind of tells you something right there.
Right.
If they're only going to the big production places and only saying great things about them, chances are they're just getting invited and they're getting free meals and that's the exchange.
Steve Dolinsky with me. He's a Hungry Hound. You can find him on ABC7. He's always on Fridays and Saturdays, Friday at noon, Saturdays at 10. Longtime restaurant reporter. I wouldn't say reporter. What do you call it?
Food reporter.
Food reporter.
I do drinks. I do all kinds of stuff. Pizza.
What's your style? Like, are you a kind of guy that wants to go in the first week, or are you always paying attention to the new restaurants that are coming out? And
less so. I used to really care more about it, and I used to be had this sort of. I'd get into arguments on Twitter with people, and like, you know what? I got older and I got mellower. I'm like, why don't I even do that? I mean, just don't even go there. No, but in terms of like my professional side of it, I do want to go early just to see what it's like.
Yeah.
And then if there's one or two things that I like, even if I have a bad experience, at least I know I want to come back and give this another chance. And that's usually what happens. I'll usually go to a place once or twice. You know, I got to give people a break. Everybody has a bad night. Everybody, it's early jitters. I understand. Mm-hmm. But I'm really looking to go early just to kind of get a sense for it. And really, what I'm looking for ABC is what can I latch on to here that would be an interesting story. So like last week, great example, went to four places in one night. A couple of them were Guatemalan and sort of Central American and Salvadorian. And I found this one chicken dish called pepian that I'm going to do a story on. I'm shooting it on Thursday at two places. They both do this dish called pepian, and I'm going to show you what it is and how it's made. That's what I'm looking for.
You're always leading with your curiosity. That's what I always love about you, that you're not afraid to go into places that aren't on the beaten path and off the beaten path. I don't know. There's just something about you're always looking for curiosity in food that people don't know about.
Because it's a huge region. I mean, you know, when I moved to Chicago 25 years ago, I was just overwhelmed with how big the city was. I'm originally from Minnesota. And I thought, you know, there's Devon Avenue on the north side, and there's, you know, there's interesting Italian community in Harlem. But then you really, like, there's Indians in Schaumburg and Naperville, and there's, you know, this Middle Eastern community in Oaklawn. And that's what was so fascinating to me. And so, yeah, I'm constantly driving around the city, you know, craning my neck looking at awnings, you know, what looks interesting to me. And my wife gives me a hard time all the time. She's like, look at the road, stop turning left and right. But that's what's so cool about Chicagoland, right? I mean, we've got, it's so vast, so it's way more than, and I think, you know, unfortunately a lot of people just stick to West Town, West Loop, River North, and it's, I get a lot of coverage in the local magazines, but man, there is so much beyond that. And so that's kind of what I you know, sort of put my feather in my cap, like I'm trying to do more than that.
312-981-7200. You can tell Steve where he should go next. How about that?
Tell me.
Tell him. He'll listen for sure. The Restaurant Week is this week. We heard a lot about
this. Yeah, it's actually 2 weeks. Goes through for February 9th.
It's just false advertising.
It should be restaurant week, parenthetically, S parenthetically. Okay, so it's, but listen, this is the slowest time of year in the restaurant industry. You know, in January, after the first year, everybody's saving their money because they spent it all in December. And so the restaurant industry really has a tough time. They have the same bills, they have the same rent and same mortgage and same labor costs, right? So they're trying to offer deals to people to get them in the door. It's usually $24, I think, for lunch, maybe $36 for dinner, sometimes $48 for dinner, depending on the place. It's a great way to sample the restaurants in Chicagoland. More than 400 are participating this year, which is incredible. We're going to put the information on your website, but it's basically choosechicago.com. This is the city's tourism arm, has them all.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't just take them at face value. You do want to look, let's say you want to go to Avec, which I love their menu, by the way, and it's a great restaurant in West Loop. Just look online, look at their menu, just to make sure, like, if an entree is 17 and an appetizer is 8, and, you know, then it makes sense to pay 36 for, you know, dinner maybe. But, like, if you look at, do some of the numbers. Do some math, because not every place is a great deal. But there are great restaurants like, what was the one? Hai Su in Pilsen is a fantastic modern Vietnamese restaurant. Tai Deng there is brilliant. Big Jones up in Andersonville, fantastic fried chicken, very much in the southern tradition and sort of that Edna Lewis cookbook tradition. Abba, kind of a hot place where all the cool kids go in West Loop. They've also great, great restaurant week menus. So, but go to Choose Chicago and check out all of them. Yeah.
It is true, because this weekend we went out for my mom's birthday, and it was at Trulux, which is the seafood place on Rush Street.
Oh yeah,
and
how was it?
It was good. It was really good. They're, you know, we knew them from Florida because we would go down to Naples when our son was, you know, yay big, and that's we went there, and we're like, oh my god, they came to Chicago. So it's a different dining experience, but it's the same kind of food.
Also, about high margin item though, because seafood is going to be pricier, and so if you can get a deal for 36 or for 48 for dinner, then it might be worth going to get Alaskan king crab or something.
The deal was an appetizer, one of those Alaskan king crab type specials, and then a dessert. And so I found myself, because I did the same thing you just talked about. I found out that I would rather do off the menu. I don't need it. And then I also found myself late last night eating leftover key lime pie.
So ooh, nice.
It was nice. That feels so good in the morning when you're like, why did I just golf that down? But
you're young. It's okay. Live a little. Look, Alaskan king crab, that is for sure something I would get at restaurant week, because that is a high margin item. And it's in season right now, too, which is fantastic.
Yep. 219 says, you ever go to Indiana?
I do. Not enough, but I do. Yes, I've been to Whiting, and I've had some pierogi, and there's a good Polish community over there in Northwest Indiana, and there's some great little joints, and I've done stuff in Valpo, and but dude, I am all ears. If you think there's a great place in Indiana, you know, let me know. You go to my website, stevedolinsky.com, and just contact me there, and I get a lot of tips that way, actually. Somebody tipped me off to a place recently I went to go check out, so if there's a place in Indiana, let me know.
I would think that in this day and age, because of all the communities we talk about, whether it's Valpo or Chesterton, which is nearby, or even some of the areas you just mentioned, Oak Lawn, and like that, everybody is really investing in local, and you'll get these community restaurants or restaurants that come in that might be the fine dining spot for that specific town. It never ends. It just never ends. My mother-in-law lives in Valpo, and every time I go out, she's like, we got a new spot. It's crazy.
Wait, is that Spanish place still there, by the way?
Yeah, it is.
Was it Don Quixote?
I think so. Oh my God.
Yeah, the billboards on the highway. I mean, every 5 minutes. No, I know there are great gems in those towns. I mean, Valpo's a cool town, too, but I like there's all of a sudden, like in the middle of nowhere, there's this interesting little main street, and there's some good restaurants. Yeah. Again, I would love to know about places. I tend not to do chains. I tend not to do just, you know, burgers and steaks. And if it's a pasta place, and I get a lot of references for Italian, they got to be making stuff in-house. Mm-hmm. Like Muno up in Uptown or Tortello in Wicker Park. You know, they're making everything from scratch. That's what I want to see. I want to see the artisan making the stuff, not just opening a box of dried pasta.
Right. This person is a super pita on Milwaukee between Devon and Tui. Is a spot you should check out, in Captain's House, which is in Indiana. It didn't say where.
Oh,
just throwing them out at you.
That's what
I do.
All right,
I'm able to get my listeners to be able to just shout at you.
Yeah, harness the power of the GN audience and tell the hungry hand where to go.
All right, you got a list of new restaurants?
I got a couple.
Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we take a quick break? Yeah, and we'll come back. Steve Dolinsky is here, the Hungry Hound at 720 WGN. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Steve Dolinsky, the Hungry Hound, who can be found at ABC 7 here in Chicago, both the Fridays at noon and Saturdays at 10 p.m., been covering the food scene here, and food reporter for how many years? 25 years now?
25. Last week, actually, was my 25th anniversary.
How about that?
I started at the Tribune Company doing a show called Good Eating.
CLTV.
I was at CLT before that, right. So it's Good Eating started 25 years ago this last week. And then 17 years ago, went to ABC 7.
Sorry, 17 years. That's crazy.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
I mean,
cool.
You were a toddler.
I was. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On making it this far, 25 years. We talk about new restaurants. Before we do that, one of the big things happening in food, and I don't hear it a lot, but I know that people are reporting on it, with the coronavirus, this is the Lunar New Year. This is the Chinese New Year that just started, and I would assume a lot of different restaurants and a lot of different Chinese places in the area are changing their plans from what they first wanted to do based on what's happening.
Yeah, and this Saturday there was supposed to be a big event at the Harris Theater that Tony Hu, the unofficial mayor of Chinatown, was organizing. It just got canceled because they're just so worried about everything related to China right now and people coming from China. And you know, there was one case, I think, in Illinois already. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the restaurants, I was in Chinatown on Friday night. By the way, Chef Jiang is the name of the restaurant I went to. It was like 2100 South Archer. Excellent. And the chef used to work at some well-known restaurant, too. But it was moderately busy. It wasn't totally packed. But it is Chinese New Year. And so usually Chinatown is hopping, and there's, you know, the parade and everything.
Yeah.
I didn't get this sense. And it was also, weather was terrible Friday. But I didn't get the sense that there was this celebratory mood at all. People are really nervous and on edge, I think. Mm. So it's too bad. Because
it's a big time. It's obviously the New Year, but it's also a big time for restaurants and for getting together and things like that.
Yeah, although people in Chicago aren't getting their import. You know, they're not importing produce from Wuhan. They're not getting stuff directly from China. And the guests here are Chicagoans for the most part. So, you know, they shouldn't worry about it. I mean, Chinatown in Chicago is safe. Let's just say that. I mean, no problem eating on Friday like a king. So it was great.
Well, there you go. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Steve Dolinsky is here. Let's talk about some new restaurants. 2019, I saw all the restaurants that closed in 2019. It was a bad year.
This told me
one time, and I'll never forget this, and that it stuck with me from the years we've worked together, that it is a unbelievable feat for a restaurant the last 5 years in Chicago.
Yeah.
That was the thing. That was the going rate. Is that still the case? Is that still the mantra in the restaurant business?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's a shame to see, like, Semitas Puebla, which is a beloved place that just closed down this past week, and they maybe have overexpanded, but they shut down all their locations. They made a fantastic Mexican sandwich from Oaxaca, and it just, like, little places like that you really want to root for and see succeed, and when they close, you're just like, gosh, you know, what happened? Of course, you never really know the story. Like Quixote, which is a great Mexican-ish place that was in Logan Square, they closed last year. And just, 5 years is a milestone if you can make it that long. People also are kind of fickle in Chicago. You know, places in Chicago are hot for a couple of months, and then it's like crickets.
Mm.
Like, you know, you couldn't get into Green Street Smoked Meats for a long time, and then, you know, now you walk in on a Wednesday night and you can just kind of stroll right in. It just depends. The press loves to jump on places and talk about the same places, and then they sort of move on to the next shiny, bright thing. So, I think you make it 5 years, that, you know, good for you. But, you know, I'm always just trying to promote the little guys, too. I mean, I don't think the big restaurant groups need a lot of promotion. Although, you know, RPM Seafood just opened up on the river in this glorious building over here in the River North area. There are a lot of other little places. Like Lao Peng Yu is a great example.
Lao Peng Yu.
It's at 2020 West Chicago, so Chicago and Damon. Just a couple of second-generation kids doing dumplings and homemade noodles and really simple Chinese dishes. If you want to go to a place kind of to get into the spirit of Chinese New Year and not have to go to Chinatown, this is a great little neighborhood joint. Everything's made from scratch, really reasonable prices, too. Just really charming. Only open, I think, Thursday through Sunday, so only like 4 days a week. But they're really doing it the right way. Another place out in Palatine, the Dream Place. This is not a sleeping store or a mattress store.
It's mattress store by day.
Yes.
And then it turns into a nice restaurant.
Dreams of Szechuan peppercorns by night. Really fantastic. Fantastic Szechuan food. That was my story on ABC this past Saturday. But I was doing a series on great Chinese places outside of Chinatown, like D'Angela's Dumplings in Libertyville or Katie's Dumplings in Westmont and Oak Park. And then this place, the Dream Place in Palatine, which I thought was just fantastic on Dundee. Mm. Really a surprise. And somebody tipped me off on Instagram, and I went that day and loved it. Not a Chinese place, but a fun place, Japanese-ish place, is right at the Green Line stop at Morgan, right underneath the train. It's called Gaijin, which means foreigner in Japanese. This is from Paul Verant, who has V out in Western Springs.
Yeah, right.
You know, he's one of the original sort of local Chicago chefs.
OG, right?
Yeah, he's an OG.
Right.
Gaijin is his homage, his sort of love letter to Osaka, and a particular dish called okonomiyaki, which is a pancake, but it's a Japanese pancake, and it's got cabbage and maybe pork or chicken or beef, whatever you want, and then this sort of QP mayonnaise and an okonomiyaki sauce, which is kind of like an A1, and then dried nori, which is seaweed, or katsuobushi or bonito, which is like a smoked and dried skipjack tuna across the top of it. It's a delicious dish. It's got lots of umami,
wow,
which is that fifth sense, yeah, that savory sense. Gaijin, a lot of fun. Drink beers, Toki highballs, really good stuff.
You are always championing the Asian cuisine in this area. No, I mean, you really seem to have an affinity for it. Where's that come from? That you are, because you cover all foods, and you're Mr. Pizza, of course, as well. But
yeah,
when it comes to Asian cuisine, you are all over it.
I think I've just always been intrigued by the cuisine. I grew up in northern Minnesota, ate a lot of hearty, heavy Scandinavian and German food and Polish and sort of Eastern European. And so when I got to Chicago and discovered like the umami, the sort of soy, the noodles, the way that things are plated, just really delicateness, right, of a lot of this food, a lot of herbs used in Vietnamese cooking, just things that were so beguiling to me, I've just kind of fallen in love with
You're
it.
Like, sign me up.
Yeah, if I were
civilization.
People are always like, oh, pizza's your favorite food, right? Because I write about pizza and I got a pizza tour. I'm like, you know what? I think if I had to say Korean barbecue, Korean's my thing.
Is there a food right now? We'll get back to this in a second, but is there a food? It seems like every 6 months, Chicago gets into a craze over one type of food or another.
Fried chicken sandwiches.
Exactly. Where are we at right now? I mean, it's January, so it's light, but do you have a feeling that the hot thing right now is going to be?
Well, you know, a year, 2 years ago it was ramen, but now we're seeing a brand new ramen place from Japan opening up in Des Plaines called Chicago Ramen, and another new place just opened in Lincoln Square called Menya Ramen, I think, from the guys from Wasabi. So you're seeing ramen come on again, but then you're also seeing the fried chicken places. Fry the Coop opened up another place in the city, and then there's Roost, of course, and there's Honey Butter Fried Chicken, and you see a lot of fried chicken sandwich places. And then, you know, the trend really is food halls. That is the trend. Not necessarily one particular cuisine, but the idea of eating with a dozen options right in front of you. Revival food hall, the Timeout Market. There's a brand new one that the Cornicks have just opened up in the South Loop. There's a Cook County food hall coming online near UIC and Rush Hospital pretty soon.
The one in Sears Tower is coming up?
Right. Yeah, that's where Rick Bayless has got his Tortaza concept, which is his partnership with the guys from Jollibee in the Philippines. But yes, the Sears Tower, or Willis Tower. So there's a lot of food halls.
Sears.
I call it Sears.
We'll call it Sears.
Yeah. Exactly.
We don't...
Exactly. Comiskey.
So formal here,
I go to Comiskey, too. So I just, the food hall thing is definitely the trend in Chicago right now, because it's a great play by realtors. You get an advantage for tenants, you know, something that's kind of a draw.
Yeah. And it's cool. It's a good concept, because it's especially like the Timeout Market one, where you're in the middle. The only problem I have with it is it's just so damn expensive.
The Timeout is a little bit of expensive place. Yes, I agree. Like $6 for a slice of pizza there, not a very good one.
It's the least of my. If I got a $6 anything out of there, I'd be like, hallelujah.
Yeah,
it feels like everything's 12 and up.
Yeah, I agree. It's that they're getting some pushback from that. Now, listen, they do have some of the best chefs in town. I think they did a great job of curating that, but it's an expensive proposition. It's a little bit like, I don't want to say ADD generation, but it's like, you know, people who can't make up their minds, or you want to have a lot of choices. You want to customize things. You go to a hall like that, you can have vegan, you can have sushi, you can have whatever you want, soup, whatever your needs are satisfied. By the way, a great Italian beef in that Timeout Market from Decent Beef, from Kevin Hickey, proud product of Bridgeport and the Duck Inn. He's doing a great Italian beef there, and along with his hot dogs too.
Steve Dolinsky is here, the Hungry Hound. He's the ABC 7 on Fridays at noon and Saturdays at 10. We're talking restaurants and, of course, food here on the program. I'm always blown away by the trends and everything, because you're on top of all this stuff. And I wonder, because I have you on, I don't have you on enough, but, you know,
I was gonna say
once
that
a
too.
Year.
Yes.
But last time we talked, I think there was this thought about where Chicago was as a food town. Because when I first came over here and we were talking, we're like, Chicago was it. Rahm Emanuel brought in the James Beard Awards. This was going to be the high fine dining capital of the world, and it should be, and all the great restaurants, and this is it. Yeah. And now, are we still there? Because last year you were like, it's waning.
Well, I think we should be clear that just because you bring the Beard Awards to your city doesn't mean it's a great food city. That doesn't equal great food city. It's basically you were able to get the biggest check written to bring the awards here.
Right, right.
So that doesn't mean you're a great food city. Now, that said, Chicago's an amazing food city. Our problem is that we don't have enough of we don't have multiples. You know, we've got like two Persian restaurants. We've got, you know, three or four omakases, which are where you do the sort of the Japanese chef designed menu. We don't have a ton of stuff like LA or New York. And then, of course, unlike LA, where they've got the seasons are just always bursting with strawberries and, you know, beautiful produce. We don't have that either. So it's a very limited window here. You're looking at like, you know, a month or two of strawberries. You're looking at a month of tomatoes, although Mighty Vine now and Roselle provides tomatoes year-round. But it's a little trickier in Chicago because of the weather. And I will say people are drawn to Chicago because it's more affordable. You cannot afford to live in New York or San Francisco. And even L.A. is getting to be difficult. So you're finding a lot of talent now relocating to Chicago. I love the fact that John and Karen Shields opened up Smith here. You know, they used to work at Trotters. Then they were on the East Coast, and they came back to Chicago.
I didn't know that.
You know, David Posey was at Blackbird for several years. He and his wife opened up Elsk in the West Loop. So you find people staying in Chicago. The guy who owns SKY in Pilsen, he was going to go to LA with his wife. He was doing an incubator with Let Us Entertain You for a while at Intro, and then they decided, you know what, LA is too expensive. We're going to stay in Chicago, make this our home, and they invested in a place on 18th Street, and they built SKY, and it's a fantastic sort of, I don't want to say Korean-ish restaurant, but his wife's Korean, and so it's a little bit of that, but it's a kind of, I don't know, it's just a creative American menu, and I just think that that's one of the reasons Chicago beats these other cities is because we are a place of experimentation, right? We've got Alinea. We used to have Moto. Even Trotters started here so many years ago. People here love to try things. You know, the theaters always come here. The Broadway shows come here to do tryouts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the place that we want to work out the kinks. So this is a place that is up for experimentation, whether it's architecture or theater or food.
The one thing we have, and we beat all those places on, is pizza.
Yep.
And you are continuing with the pizza tours and just being Mr. Pizza.
Pizza City USA, pizza baby. PizzaCityUSA.com.
I love it. What's up with that? I mean, are there new pizza places coming online, or
yes,
are we at the point where...
No.
No, we haven't.
No, here's the thing. My book came out over a year and a half ago. There are six places I wish I could include in that book now. Places like Bob's Pizza in Pilsen, or Grateful Bites in Winnetka, or Roebuck Pizza in Lakeview, or even like on Mondays, tonight is pizza night at Ludlow Liquors up on California. The only place I know of doing a proper New York style Sicilian that is really crunchy in the undercarriage underneath, like you'd find at a DeFara in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I mean, really unique pizza that we didn't have up until recently. And so, again, these guys are like, this, the guy at Ludlow worked at Middlebrow Bungalow, which has a fantastic pizza also, which I should have mentioned. and then he left to go to Ludlow, and he's doing a fantastic Sicilian now. And Roebuck is doing an all-natural fermentation, all-natural starter that they feed every day to give you that beautiful crumb in the middle of the crust. So there's a lot of places that have opened. I'm telling you, Grateful Bites in Winnetka, if I live in the North Shore, I'd be there once a week. It's a fantastic pizza place nobody knows about.
Did you see the online, the little meme that was going around about the tavern-style pizza, and they put the numbers on the pieces,
like,
and
the Subway seats
you grab?
Yeah,
which one would you go for? Are you a corner guy? You go get the...
I get the corner. I don't get the little tiny triangle. I get the sort of the medium one, because I want to have, like, equal... I want ratio. I want equal amounts of crust and middle. I would never go for the only middle piece. That's an amateur move.
That's an amateur move.
I mean, come on.
You've always been a guy about ratio. That's what I like about you.
OBR, optimal bite ratio. That's my mantra. I tried to trademark OBR, and I talked to an attorney, and he's like, you can't do that.
You can't do it.
Optimal bite ratio, though, is such a great term.
Why not? That's perfect.
It's not unique enough.
It's not unique.
It's got to be like Steve's optimal bite ratio or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
But come on a pizza tour, pizzacityusa.com.
There you go. Steve Dolinsky, you can find him on TV at ABC 7. You can find him online at stevedolinsky.com, and, of course, the pizza tours as well. Great to see you, man. And
you too.
Let's not make it every year. Let's make it every year and 2 months. That'd be great.
Sounds great. Works for me.